Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
I'm Derek Riley, I'm with Charlie Smith, and welcome to Dirty Water, a conversation with surfing notables, where the listener is carried off like a child to play in paradise, forgetful of all sorrows. Today's guest on Dirty Water is the world number 17, although this number scarcely reflects his influence on the world tour. Apart from being the 2016 Rookie of the Year, he is the demon to whom John Florence and Gabriel Medina prostrate themselves before, Medina a particular slave to his baptism. A week after our guest's 26th birthday in 2019, this journeyman of 5 feet and 6 inches, who nobody pays attention to, although they should, was catapulted into the world of 130 million souls as the boogeyman who stole Gabriel Medina's dream for a third world title. May God bless the underdog, Kyo Abeli. What long till he left me crying out in the night. Oh, yeah. Where are you, Kyo?
I'm in Brazil, Guarujá. It's a couple hours from São Paulo.
Is that your dog going nuts in the background?
Yeah.
What breed?
The dog is like, he thinks he's human, so he thinks he belongs inside of the house. So once he's outside of the house, he keeps barking.
We're gonna try maybe he thinks he smells Gabriel Medina coming to get you.
Yeah, I'm going to leave him outside of my dog.
Bring him in if he's going to...
He's not like that. Usually he's pretty chill. He never barks. Yeah,
hey, I can see the jersey in the background. Is that second to Bell's jersey, 2017?
No, that's my jersey from the World Juniors and the trophy.
Oh yeah, I see the trophy.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Right there.
That's a prominent place. Is that where you show girls when they come to your house?
No, this is my dad's house. My place has no Wi-Fi for the moment, so I don't bring girls here. I had a room in the back, but the pandemic, like, my mom literally would wake up and would open the windows and like, oh, who's there? Does your friend want some water? And I'm like, oh shit, it might be time for me to move out.
is this the first room you take them to show them your world junior trophy?
Not really. I think the jersey and the frame somebody gave us, so we just put it there. And the trophy, I just gave my dad all the trophies, so he think he takes a better care than me. So,
do you have any other jerseys framed or?
No. Usually, I give them away to my friends and people, places.
Have you ever paddled out at home in a WSL jersey just because?
No. You never have.
That's a shame.
Why? I would do that every single time I surf.
Yeah, no, that's – I have like a pretty cool – so back, I don't know, maybe like 3 years ago, WSL used to give us those like shirts with our names.
Yeah.
And like they made a bunch of them, and apparently they sold a bunch of them and never gave the people the money. But – I mean, we never seen the money. Honestly, like, they wanted to give the money. Like, if John sold 1,000 jerseys, they would pay the percentage to John. But, like, my idea in the meeting, like, I wanted them to sell Mix, John, Kelly's, and Medina's, and then share the money to all of us.
Great idea. That's the way they're doing it.
Like, don't freaking give me, like... Probably the money you're going to give me back is the money that I purchased or my family purchased all the shirts. So like, come on, I want money from the boys. Yeah, but no, I have a few of those shirts, but I'm still embarrassed to like use them. I don't know.
Oh, man.
I live to my dad. He does it. He's the man.
I paddle out here with a blank t-shirt that I scribble my last name on and then try to draw like the Billabong logo or the Quicksilver logo.
Oh, I've done that on the board. Came out pretty lame. Luckily the board wasn't good. I gave it back.
Hey, so I thought first of all, we could talk about where you're from, and because people might know your background and what part of Brazil you live in and how that compares to where Italo lives, where Gabriel lives, and where Adriano lives, and so on. So tell us about you.
Yeah, so I'm from Guarujá. It's a couple hour drive from the airport in São Paulo. And it's like a little, it's kind of a fisherman city, but it's like a small town. And we get beach breaks at like all over, like just maybe like a couple miles from my house, we have like 7 different spots. And we get all kinds of winds and all kinds of tides and swell directions. So honestly, like I wouldn't have to leave here to surf anywhere else. Like I can surf every single day of the year. There's somewhere to surf. So it's a great little town to live. There's definitely like, it's just small town. Everybody knows everybody. So it's kind of boring. You can't do anything else than surf, but it's fun. I love it. My family's here. It's like, I was at Gabriel's place, Marzias, and I drove, I woke up and I look at the wind. I'm like, oh, it could be barreling. So drove a couple hours. I was there, got a bunch of barrels and I just got back home. So there's a bunch of little hour and a half, 2 hour drives that you can just score great waves.
How locked down is Brazil right now, COVID wise?
So my town specific, like if you don't have an address or a text, your text ID is not showing that you're from here, you're not allowed to get in the city. So it's kind of restrict, but there's other places like Marzias and other towns and cities in São Paulo that it's all good. You can drive around, but yeah, it's like here in Guarujá, we were allowed to surf like just a couple. They let us surf like maybe a week and a half or a couple weeks ago. Like in the last 3 months, I only surfed like a week and a half.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't surfed at all.
It feel good to get back in the water?
Yeah, it feels great. Like, I mean, just weird. Like I surfed a week out of those 3 months and like I got chased down by the police and I had to paddle like maybe like 2Ks, like maybe even more just so they don't take my board. So kind of like a weird feeling, kind of fun, like running from the police and like, oh shit, they're looking that way. Ah, jump in the water. That way. Now they can't catch you, but like the waves are going off and I was surfing for a couple hours and surfing by myself. And I looked outside and like, they were lining up like maybe like 8 police cars and they're all lined up. And I would catch a left and they would run to the beach and catch a right and run to the other side of the beach. And I'm like, okay, maybe this time I won't get away. So I had to paddle like a couple miles away and go outside and the waves are really big. And I had to just run on the rocks, but I made it home. So that was kind of a story. Maybe I'll tell my kids one day.
That's a solid one right there.
Yeah.
Outlook, how?
Yeah, I like it. Kind of rebel.
The Brazilian police aren't usually the sort of people you want to humiliate in such a fashion, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just I feel like they're taking it's definitely like it was a serious thing to take, but I feel like they're doing just to the surfers. They were trying to show something that showed the power, but the surfers were not criminals, and they were treating like a criminal. And maybe they were doing the right thing, but not in the right. Not in the right way. So it was kind of lame. And all over the world, people were surfing and even in the cities here in Brazil, like they were surfing and that was fine. And here in Guarujá, I was just like chasing people, taking boards and like bringing people to jail. And it was kind of lame, but now we're all free, kind of free. We're learning how to live with masks and not touching people's hands. And it's just, now, if you like a chick on the beach, you gotta know by the forehead and the eye. You're like, that's a keeper. But, yeah, it's a different lifestyle here in Brazil, and people are dying every single day, more and more. So, I don't know. I don't know what you believe anymore, honestly. Like, it's there, but I don't know if it's that bad, or if it's not.
Old people wearing masks on the beach, are they?
Huh?
Are people wearing masks on the beach?
Yeah. I mean, on the beach, you're not allowed to stay on the beach. So you can only run or ride a bike or swim, but you can't stand on the sand, stay in the sand and sit down. So yeah, people are wearing masks. Most of the places, definitely like, I mean, if you're on the beach, like swimming, people don't wear masks, but people are with masks everywhere or even trying to be. that's kind of the right thing. I'm doing the same as much as I can.
Sure. What about you, Chad? Do you wear a mask down the beach?
No, we not on the beach down here. You can pack the beaches here. I was just out yesterday. The beach was packed. Not one mask around. But yeah, in the stores and stuff, we have to. So I put it on when I go to the store. But yeah, no beach.
Yeah, I haven't vested in my first mask yet. Like someone gave the last mask I had, and I'm like, oh, maybe this is gonna go away. But apparently, you're gonna just have to purchase one.
I mean, the surf brands should start making masks is what should start happening.
Yeah, maybe a mask with like a clear part that you can see the smile.
Hey, Kaya, when did you first think that you're going to be a pro surfer?
Well, I was kind of born and raised until I was 8 years old in São Paulo in the city. My dad used to work in São Paulo, so I was only surfing until 8 years old. I was only surfing on the weekends and every 2 weeks when my dad could take us to the beach. And it wasn't like easy or ideal, so I was just having fun at that point. And then one time I came to the city I live now, and I just fell in love and asked my dad, like, hey, dad, look, this place is insane. There's places to surf everywhere. You walk everywhere. You don't need a car or bike. Like, my dream is to live here one day. And my dad, like, after 6 months, he took me and my brother. He rented a little place and put me, my brother, and my mom inside of that little apartment. And after that, I started surfing every day. And I'm like, whoa, this is pretty fun. Like, I want to do that forever. And I kind of like fell in love with surfing, and it everything went pretty natural. Like, honestly, like everybody that my dad spoke to, they were like, hey man, look, your son is born and raised on the city. Like, there's no chance you're going to be a pro surfer. Be real to yourself. And my dad's like, oh no, maybe you can do it. Maybe you can do it. They're like, look, my son is born on the beach. Your son's born in the city. Like, there's no chance. And I just lived with that for a long, long time. And then, like, the young talents, like, they just start fading away. And I was kind of, like, rising a little bit, like, just chasing. I had always that feeling of chasing. And maybe that's the best thing I have this day, that I love people. I love when people put me down and I have something to prove. And that's where the fire comes.
Does Brazil have the concept of like the underdog thing? I mean, where the underdog is the one you want to root for, and the kind of underdog fight?
No, I feel in Brazil is different. I feel in Brazil, like, usually, like, when you're from a city, instead of this, the whole, I mean, it's hard to say, like, the whole city don't cheer for you, or they don't want to see you win. But like all the little surfing guys, like, and around, they're all kind of like jealous, like, oh shit. Like, that guy is not cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's in Brazil, like, when you go outside of your city or outside of your state, people are just like, oh my God, welcome. You surf, you get the best wave here. Here's a drink. Here's like in your city, people are just like, I might like you, but I can show you that I like you. You know what I mean? So it's kind of weird, but it's good. We live like a really simple lifestyle here. Like, I surf and I come back and I eat and I surf and come back and sleep. So that's all I like to do. Yeah.
So you really are the classic underdog from 10 years old. You've always been the underdog, the kid who wasn't going to succeed, but
yeah,
you know, you're the man who Gabriel, John, and Kelly all prostrate themselves before. It's amazing.
I feel like once I get too comfortable with some situations, I feel sometimes I get too relaxed. So I use that in my favor now. Like, I don't have sponsors, so if I don't make heats, if WSL don't come back quick and I don't make heats, like, I don't have income. So I feel like that makes me want to chase more, get better surfing, and work on some stuff that I'm weak. And that helps me. I love that pressure. I love to be I mean, I don't love to be pressured. Like, if I could choose being pressured or not, I would love to just stay under the shade drinking coconut water and surfing when I want it. But that doesn't make me any good. So I like to be pressured against the wall and be like, dude, if you don't make that heat, you're out of the tour. And I feel that's when the best comes out of me.
Do you think that, I mean, what do you hear or what do you know about the tour coming back either this year or next year? Or is there any word that you guys are receiving?
Yeah, I feel there's like, honestly, like right now they're going to give us another update. There's something I heard speculation that it would be like towards the end of the year, maybe pipe to start like new season, but I'm not sure yet. I don't really know. We're just taking day by day. But right now, there's not even flights to America from Brazil. And the next scheduled flight is in October. So I have no board since last year, August, from Australia. So it's just tough.
What are you riding right now?
I'm riding DHD. The guys from Brazil made me a couple. Luckily, like they helped me out a few boards, but I had 10 boards made in Australia that I was supposed to get in March, and then I wasn't able to go to Australia, and then they sent you to California, and then when I was flying to California to pick them up, they just shut down the border, so stuck.
Jesus. So the threat of the police breaking one of your boards was pretty much an existential threat. That was
If they take the only board I have, it's done. I'm about to start body surfing.
Hey, so from a pretty early age, did you realize you weren't going to be, like Gabriel Felipe and be getting massive sponsorships, and that you'd have to fight for every sort of dollar you earned?
I feel like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't so early when I kind of, it's just Gabriel, like he just went to the next level really quick. Like he was 15 years old and we're all like coming out of like amateur contests and the guy just got so good. We're like, oh man, I don't know if we can follow that guy. Honestly, like he's just so good. And then Philippe kind of came right after. And Philippe maybe didn't have what Gabriel had, because I feel like Gabriel's like was really complete, like turns, barrels, and everything. And Philippe was just the air guy that could make anything bad look really good. So they just like came back to back. And yeah, I mean, I had a really good relationship, and I feel like I had an amazing contract with Oakley. And it was something like I didn't really see. Oakley sponsored me for 16 years and as a main sponsor, and their relationship I didn't see coming to an end when it came, because they put so much money on my amateur career and also when I was professional, but I wouldn't expect them to pull out when I was on tour, because that's what kind of they prepared me to. So it was surprisingly, and it's just, I've been trying to live without a sponsor now and trying to make all the good decisions to keep the lifestyle I have today for the rest of my life.
So how did the Oakley thing end? Did they just send you a letter or give you a call and say thanks for the laughs?
Yeah, well, I still ride for Oakley as co-sponsor. But they just stopped doing clothing, I guess, and he only had me and Seabass left. So once we had a lot of surfers riding the head-to-toe program, and all of a sudden it was me and Seabass, and we were like, okay, maybe the two of us will be able to keep our jobs. And it just didn't happen. But yeah, it was a bummer. I mean, they just put so much money, especially me and Seabass. Seabass, when Oakley stopped doing the clothing, like we're still on tour, so for them, would imagine still would be a good thing to have that exposure. But yeah, it happens. Like now more than ever, like with the coronavirus, feels like things are more even harder to find deals and sponsor and make money. So
what do you do for money now?
For now, I just live out of prize monies. I have a couple of sponsors, like ride my accessory company from South Africa. And Oakley, I have DHD, and I'm opening a burger joint here in Brazil next week. So
maybe you're opening a burger joint?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe I can live out of burgers one day.
Oh, that's so sweet. What's the angle? You could be a Burger King.
Yeah, I mean,
Cow Burger King of Belly.
We just done the photo shoot yesterday, and it came out like better than Burger King's freaking photos. Like, I was stoked.
What's the burger concept? Is there anything? Is it just a standard burger, or is there a? Is it healthy?
Well, no, it's not healthy. It's a burger for people that like burgers and fat.
That's what I want to hear right there.
It's the real deal. Yeah.
I had a damn healthy burger today, and I was so depressed. I was just weepy. It was like on a whole wheat bun, and it just made me sad.
Yeah, I'd rather die.
I mean, I'd rather die than have a bad burger.
I go to doctors, and they're like, dude, maybe like I eat okay, but I love my ice cream and I love my bacon, and they were like, oh, you would surf better, you would stay longer in the water. I'm like, dude, I'd rather die than stop doing that. That's my happiness. If I don't eat that, I'd rather be dead. Like, life makes no sense.
I hear you. Do you have a bacon burger?
I do. I'm not going to start with a bacon burger, but I have a bacon burger.
Okay, good.
Right.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. So maybe
looks like you brand the Abelli burgers into the bun. Was that just for the Instagram story, or do you do that in every bun?
No, we're gonna do it in every bun.
So everyone gets to
eat. Everybody will eat a little piece of.
That's beautiful. A few chicks hang there. Want to get a piece of you?
Yeah, maybe I send her a free cheeseburger so she don't get.
So whereabouts in your beautiful little paradise is the Abelli Burgers.
So the Abelli Burgers, like the first idea, maybe everything just happened so quick. About maybe a month ago, my family, they work in a school inside of a restaurant. They have a restaurant inside of a school. So they've been like shut down for 3 months, and the bills has been stacking up. I've been helping at home financially. Without a sponsor, and I've been just helping as much as I can. And I don't really see the school coming back anytime soon. So one time I went to sleep and I'm like, hey, look, the sushi thing is a good thing, but delivery wouldn't work. Like normal food, there's 1,000 people doing like rice and beans, and I'm going to just do my burger. Like I eat enough burger in In-N-Out and I know what it tastes. So I'm going to just do it. And I woke up in the morning, I told my parents like, hey, I'm going to open a burger place. They're like, oh, cool. Like, shit. Like, we don't know nothing about burgers. We love pizza. And I'm like, no, but we're doing burgers. I was fortunate to meet people like burger owners, like the burger place owners, that just the guys helped me out like so much. They carried me like, hey, look, this is the cheese. This is the bun. This just walked me through the whole process and helped me out. So I had amazing people help me with the process. And now we're about to launch maybe next week. So we're super stoked. Maybe I can one day sell enough burgers so I don't need WSL.
I mean, I think that'll happen in 1 month of business. You'll be there.
I hope.
So what makes a good burger? Because you said that you you'd been examining In-N-Out burgers.
Yes.
What do you do with hamburger?
Our secret sauce, the blend of our burgers and the bread. The bread gotta be something familiar that people like know as a good burger. So the bread is pretty similar as the In-N-Out bread, and the sauce I made pretty much almost it. So it's nothing like exclusive. Like I'm trying to bring that like good burger taste that everything I tried before into Brazil. Like they don't have much of that. So like we have like our barbecue sauce comes from like Texas, and it's like super expensive, but you get the taste, the flavor, and that's what I'm trying to do. Like have the taste of maybe US that I was used to for so long here in Brazil, and show people that this is a good burger.
Derek Riley himself is a vegetarian until he comes to California, and then he eats In-N-Out. He's an In-N-Outitarian.
Yeah, fucking cows start trembling when I come to California. But like when we come to Brazil. Eat all the motherfuckers. I hate the cows. But I still can't eat pigs. I can't eat bacon, and I definitely can't eat lamb. So don't do lamb burgers. It's like eating puppies and shit. Can't do that. Shit. So let's talk about your almost career-ending injury in 2018. You hurt your foot in at Margaret's. Can you tell us what happened and how badly injured your foot was?
Yeah. So one day I was surfing. It was only me and Jody in the water at main break, out of main break, and the waves were kind of fun, little onshore wind, good for airs. I just went for a straight air, coming back down. The foam was coming up as my board was coming down, so my foot just went literally like that and broke the metatarsal. And I had a couple fractures and the ligament, I guess, the Lisfranc ligament. So I went to see the doctors and they're like, oh, dude, you're fine. It's just ligaments. And I'm like, I heard clicking like when it happened and they're like, oh, no, it's fine. You can just walk. I guess I was trying to.
Jesus.
I was trying to. Like, hey, Mike, just walk on it.
Yeah. You fucking pussy. What's fucking wrong with this Brazilian cunt?
Yeah.
He says he's got a broken fucking foot. Fuck off.
Yeah. Well, pretty much like that. And I was trying to walk and my foot was just like, ta, 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 ta. And I'm like, this is not normal. Maybe I shouldn't put my foot. I shouldn't put my foot on the ground. So. A couple of days after, I was able to get an x-ray and it was broken, like it said, I told them, and the ligament was bad. So we were waiting for 4 to 6 weeks to heal, to see if I needed surgery. So after 5 weeks, I went to surgery and I stayed out of the water for 3 months after that. Wasn't really able to surf and I felt pretty pressured to start surfing quick. Otherwise, I would lose my spot on tour. So I was kind of like looking to save myself, and luckily everything worked out, but it wasn't perfect.
So you missed. So you you competed in the first three events, then you missed the final eight in 2018. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
So in that same period, John had a very theatrical injury, which left him disappearing from the tour halfway through, and Kelly had a miraculous foot injury that would heal itself in the swells.
Yeah,
Fiji and so forth.
Yeah,
what were you thinking when you were in rehab and you're seeing Kelly at Fiji and so on?
I thought of myself like, look, it's not only me. I'm not the only one watching that. So he can probably think he's fooling himself, but he's not fooling like I don't know how many. I don't know if there's a million people watching WSL or surfing in general, but. He's not fooling everybody. And I thought that was the weight that I had with me, you know, like, look, I'm trying to do the right things. I'm going to all the right doctors. I'm doing all the right rehab. And Kelly's just surfing whenever he wants to surf, compete whenever he wants to compete. So I thought that as a common sense, that would work in my favor. Like, look, that guy's not taking his injury serious, but at the end it's just not how it works. He is the king, and I respect all his story. You know, like he's done so much for the sport and for surfing. And I'm a big fan of Kelly. I even like him as a person when he plays guitar and he don't talk too much. But but yeah, he's cool. It's just he was doing his thing, and maybe he knew he had the backing enough to do what he was doing. So.
But let's be honest, it's not the king wild card, right? It is the injury wild card.
Wow. And it is not.
Yeah, I mean, of course. And we all theoretically know that. And of course, there's the sheen of, you know, obviously it's Kelly, right? But
yeah.
Come on. Like, that was entirely frustrating to me. And I felt that you were singled out because, yeah. To be honest, because you're the only professional surfer that follows Beach Grit on Instagram. And
oh, really?
I thought that's what got you.
That's what I thought. I like the fire.
Yeah.
I thought you were has it.
But that's where you were singled out. I'm telling you, the bastards.
Yeah, I mean, it's like in the rule book, I don't think there's such a thing called injury wild card. So it's a wild card that they can do pretty much what they want, as far as I know. I don't read I haven't participate of much meetings in the last year or so, because I was just like, look, wherever we say, nothing changes. So I was just like watching as it goes. So I don't read the rule book, but for what I heard, that's what it is. They can do whatever they want. And when I've heard the medical staff, they had a meeting and on the medical team, they were like, hey, look like you and John, you guys are the one to get the wild card. But on the business side of it, they're like, hey, look, we were not able to lose Kelly, and he has the world title, he has the fans, and he brings more interest to the tour. So that's what who we're picking. And that was pretty heartbreaking for me to hear, because they're kind of like cooking me through the whole year, like, oh, let's wait, we don't know yet, like there's a chance, like you're looking good. And I'm
it wasn't one chance in hell, was there?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of knew it. I was just, yeah, I don't know, it's tough. Like I understand their position, and for the business side of it, like I'm just, they probably see me as just one more guy, and they gotta just run me over for Kelly. But it's understandable. I respect Kelly, and I respect what he's done. So at the end of the day, they got to do what they got to do. And luckily I saved myself with my own hands. So
how did you save yourself with your own hands?
Well, they gave me three chances. They gave me four. Well, they were going to give me two events, and I promised, like, in 2018, yeah, 2018, they told, I lost my sponsor in December, and December 31st and December 20th, they told me I wasn't going to be on tour the next year. So I promised them I was going to stop surfing. I told them, like, hey, they were like, hey, but you're good enough. You go to the QS and you come back. And I'm like, dude, look, I've trained, I've sacrificed my whole life for this, and I'm not going back into the QS and giving you guys that pleasure of like, oh, just see you later. So they were like, okay, we're gonna give you a couple spots on tour, like snapper, maybe Bells and Margaret's, that they own the spots or something like that. Oh, it was Margaret's and Bali. That was the two events that they didn't have a sponsorship. And I'm like, look, I'm not really, like, I don't know. Two events, I can't pay my bills. I can't just pay my rent in California. I was in California at that time. And I'm like, hey, that doesn't make me anything. Like, I won't have a chance to qualify at two events. So I was kind of, like, told myself, my heart. I told my dad, like, hey, dad, look, my heart isn't there anymore. Like, I don't think I want to do it. And he's like, oh, man, like, you're so young, your career is like, you know, you can do it again. And I'm like, look, my heart's not there. I don't like surfing. I don't like what they've done to me. Like, it's not something I'm proud of to be in it. And I was pretty frustrated at that time because of it, because of all I've gone through. And I was ready to kind of ready to stop surfing. And Adriano called me one morning. Adriano's like, hey, man, look, like, I'm not going to do it the first four events. And I think just get ready because you're going to be called. And I'm like, you sure? He's like, yeah, I'm sure. Like, I won't be able to do it. My knee's not good. So I just start jumping bad, like 6 a.m, just like, fuck yeah. Yeah. Four events, it's enough. Like, okay, you make at least 40 grand. You can pay your bills. You're good. I'm like, okay, now we go to Australia. I'm going to try to do the QS, the first few events, and I go to compete. And I lost first round. I was obviously, like, out of shape. Not out of shape, but I was more, like, out of surfing. Like, my surfing wasn't good at that time. I haven't surfed in, like, 6 months, and it wasn't looking good. So lost first event, lost second event, third event, I surfed a little better. That was Bells. And the fourth event, they already told me, like, hey, man, look, let's be honest here. Like, if you don't look good in this event, like, we don't really need to give you spots for the next events. We can give to the next wild card that done good in Bells or something. And I'm like, I understand. At that point, I knew it. I'm like, look, I had three chances. I had four chances, and if I blow it, like, yeah, I've done it. Nobody else. I can't blame anybody else. So the fourth event was Margaret's, and I'm like, I don't know. I was staying on the RV right in front of the main break. I was surfing the box every other day, and I was just feeling like, look, if I lose, I'm better off losing like in a good style. Like if I lose, I want to get the biggest barrel. I want to get the shot at the box. I want to just be like, look, he lost, but he's good. Like he done it. So I was super calm, and I'm like, Gabriel, Kelly, like I've got all the hardest guys out of the whole event. And I was just taking one by one. I'm like, dude, look, it's not your day today. Come back next time. Like, this is me, and get out of my way. Like I gotta do it. So luckily everything worked out. I lost to John on a very close heat in the semifinals. And that was one of the best events of my life. I was just like super relaxed. I was drinking wine the day before the heat. Brazilians, like, we're very like, look, if we don't surf in the morning, we're gonna lose the heat. It's just like that. So you gotta be the first one. You gotta be the first one to get in the water. So it's always that little thing like working your mind. And I just, that event, I was just drinking wine the night before, and I'm like, I'm happy. I'm happy to be here. And if this is my last time here, I want to remember tonight. So the next morning, I look at the waves like, oh, I want to surf. I go, if I don't want to surf, I wait for my heat. I had a pretty good conversation with Jeremy, the contest before, and I was like listening to the interview that he's done with you guys. So I had a little bit of that talk. He's like, hey, man, look, before we used to party every night here, and like we would go to the finals the next day and nothing happened. And it's all about your mind. So I was just like taking notes in my head, like, okay, look, I don't need to do that. I don't need to go that extreme, but I'm gonna take the fun route of it. So that was kind of my mindset in that last event. Like, look, I might not even come back here to compete this event ever if I'm not happy and if I don't do good. So let's just have a good time and see how it goes. And it worked.
when you were getting through the heats, obviously it's fun, but are you like cha-ching every single heat? Are you just like, that's another, well, whatever it is, grand?
Kind of like, it was like that because like literally round three, I got Gabriel, and Gabriel was like, man, with Gabriel, you're probably going to lose more than you're going to win. It's just the reality of it. The guy's just that good. So I'm like, when I got out of Gabriel's heat, I'm like, whew, I made it. And then I think I got Kelly right after, and like, you start realizing like things are not going to get easy. But I was stoked to make every heat I could make, because I knew for me to go, I think Jacob Wilcox was the wild card for Bells. And he's done, I think he got like, he lost in the quarterfinals in Bells. So I knew I had to go one up on him so I can get the better spot and get called for the next event. So I was just trying to go like one more. And he was making heat at that event as well. So I think he lost in the quarterfinals and I made it to the semifinals. And then I was one up and I'm like, okay, let's breathe now. Now we can do it.
That heat was with Kelly was pretty funny, because you had that great paddle battle with him during the heat. Like you weren't fucking backing down, were you?
No, I was just. I mean, you just gotta enjoy when you're in Kelly's heat. Like as much as I can play. Like usually he's the player, and I love to play too and see how he would react. So I was just going for it, just trying to see his reaction, to see if I was just able to play with his mind, that would be like a good satisfaction already. So, yep.
What was his reaction when you started putting in the paddle arms to beat him in that little paddle battle? Because it looked pretty furious online.
Yeah, he's he was, you know, like he has a good reaction of like showing that he doesn't fade him, you know, like he was just trying to swing in every little wave and trying to make you like little take me there, take me here. And like it was just fun to see him getting on the other side of the coin. Like usually he's the one doing that, and I was pretty stoked to kind of get him like a little, throw him in like shitty waves. That was satisfying.
So how do you do that? How do you throw someone who's surfed in, you know, 10,000 heats shitty waves?
I feel like markets here just rolling the dice. So you can look at a wave and if you're in a good roll, the guy probably sees that you caught a bunch of good waves through that whole event. So he's probably like, oh, he kind of knows which way to pick. So you just look at a wave like, oh my God, that wave looks so good. And he was just getting emotional and going for it. But yeah, I got lucky on that one.
And Kelly was so incensed after that heat. He came in and arm wrestled a kid, smashed him.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was amazing. So one thing about you is you're such a giant killer, Gabrielle, John, Kelly. What is it that enables you to do what so many other people can't?
I don't know. Maybe those guys, like, I feel like most of the heats people win in the locker room, you know, like how confident you are and how you position yourself, how you look at others, and it's just how your presence, you got to be strong. And I feel those guys, like, those guys look at other competitors and competitors goes like put their head down, and it's, I might not be a world champion, but when I'm surfing against those guys, I make them feel like, look, you're no better than me. And then if you give me a chance, I will take you down. So you just got to believe that yourself, you believe in yourself and believe that you can do that. Because if I'm just like one other guy and just bring it down, he's going to smash me. And they have everything to smash me. So just, they can, because I'm there and they're pulling their leash and their tail.
How good do you feel when you take a big scalp?
Yeah, it's good. It's like you take a good shower after. You're like, you look at the mirror and you're like, ugh! Yeah, it feels good. I feel like that's competitive surfing for me. Like, you know, surfing, I don't think surfing is, like, I love surfing for what surfing stands for, but I don't like competitive surfing so much. But I like to win. So I like to win those guys. They challenge me. And not that other guys don't challenge me, but I feel like when I'm surfing against those guys, just there's a little more to bring from inside.
So what do you do in the locker room to kind of rattle them?
Did you see the picture of me and Kelly? When I look at him, I think there's
On the devil horn?
Yeah. There's a funny one from Margaret's. I had to do that one. Like, I was just so mad at him. I don't even remember how the picture is, but I remember it was pretty funny. And in the locker room, I just prepared myself. I just, like, you know, like Gabriel, like, he, if you're in his way, I think a pipe, he almost like hit the shoulder on me, like when I was warming up. So if you see the guy gonna hit your shoulder, just leave it very strong so he just don't run you over. And you're gonna be, oh shit, oh, sorry.
So he bounces off you, huh?
Yeah, kind of. It's kind of like that. That's the concept of mine when you're preparing yourself in the locker room. So yeah.
So surfing against John and Gabriel are the two completely different surfers. How different are your strategies against John and Gabriel?
Well, Gabriel, it's pretty much the same. Like, you gotta surf at least better than them on that day, which is like they are pretty consistent. But I feel like Gabriel, you can win if you surf better. But I feel like John, you gotta surf better, and you gotta hope he doesn't surf at all. Otherwise, they're gonna give him the scores. I just feel like that's just how it works. If he surfs just as much as you do, you're going to lose. If he surfs a little less than you, you're still going to lose. So you got to just, like, I love his surfing. I love John. Like, he's the man. But sometimes you get the little edges where I never get them with nobody.
Damn judges. Damn judges.
you gotta
have you ever stormed the tower?
Well, yeah, I have, but it didn't work so well.
What happened? Can you
describe that? We had two judges in the tower, and I would say something, and it was one, I can't say the names, but it was one, there was two judges. They were not like side to side. So I was saying something. One of the judges in the back, they were like, yes, yes. The judge in the front was like, no. I was like, shit, this doesn't work. Yeah, I'm like trying to explain myself as a situation. I'm like, hey, look, I think I won the heat. And the guy's like, in the back, yes, yes. The guy in the front was like, no, I don't think so. Like, look what you've done it.
So yeah. But you don't think the judges give Gabriel any extra juice?
No, I don't think so. The guy's good. He's freaking good. Like, as much as I wouldn't want to say that, the guy's freaking the guy to beat. Like, he doesn't have a bad day. Even on his bad day, he serves better than most of the guys, and he gets the best waves and does the best things. Like, the judges want, like, it's hard to say that, but like, I feel maybe the people want him to lose because he's so good. And it's so hard for him to lose that people want him to lose. So it's kind of that concept. Like, if Gabriel lost, it's kind of cool. Like, oh, like, the guy's freaking good. He gonna win the next one kind of thing.
What's he like in the water?
Oh, it sucks. Surfed with him. If you surfed with him before, you would know. It doesn't change anything. Like, in the free surf and the contest, the guy's just like going everywhere, and I feel like that's the strategy against him. Like, you just gotta go everywhere and make him like feel dizzy from you paddling side to side, and get his attention out of his strategy. So yeah, he's not really fun to surf with. Like, I definitely had fun sessions with him before, but like during the contest, it's a nightmare to surf with him.
Is he a chatterbox in the water? Does he like to have little talks?
No. I mean, it's just very small talk because he doesn't see his butt in the board. So it's just a very small talk. You paddle around, you catch the next one and go around and around. So, but he surfs good. So it's entertaining to watch him surf.
You got to get him on the Valley Burger. You'll slow him down slightly.
Yeah, a little bit. I have a double bottle for him.
What about when he's paddling you up the point or something? He goes, "I will paddle you to fucking Diba. I'll paddle you to fucking Diba to kill you, motherfucker." Anything like that, or was it just head down and paddle?
Well, I think it's just head down and paddle. I think he does have a harder feeling with me than he would do with anybody else. So if there's one person he doesn't like to lose, it's to me. He tries really hard.
But do you feel that? Then the power shifts to you. Like, if it feels like to me, then you're in his head, right?
Yeah, a little bit. I feel a little bit, but I feel he cries in the shower when he loses to me. So I think it's very emotional. It might be a very emotional. Like, imagine Gabriel. Yeah. So
hey, I'm not sure if you remember this incident, but in 2019, you were in Portugal and Gabriel dropped in on you and you kind of bumped shoulders and he threw his arms up and had a bit of a cry then. And I'll just read you the report we ran because it's pretty sizzling. It says, with 8 minutes remaining in a heat with Caio Abelli, in a heat where he'd spent the previous 27 minutes ruthlessly ragdolling his compatriot in week 2 foot closeouts. Unbelievably, he contested a dribbly little right-hander, bumping shoulders with Abelli, who gesticulated wildly in protest. WSL screen live on the broadcast showed Abelli priority. Medina pointed to the beach as if to suggest he had priority. Live screen immediately priority switched to Medina, suggesting a mistake. Within a minute, the decision was reached and Medina had a priority interference awarded against him, meaning the loss of his second scoring wave. As a sign of Medina's dominance, the penalty was not immediately fatal, with his single wave score of an 8.17 still besting Abelli's top two rides combined. Abelli got the score, Medina out. That's pretty fucking wild, huh?
Yeah, and well, I got to thank him. I got to thank him for the qualification. I think that heat was the heat that qualified me. Like, if I lost that heat, I wouldn't probably be on third this year. So I'm very, very thankful for that. But
what actually happened there? Did he really think he had priority?
Yeah, he didn't see it because I was down the beach and the beach kind of made a curve. So he was over here trying to make it out and like he had to duck out a few waves and where I finished, I think it was the same wave where I finished, I had just had to duck dive one wave and I was sitting on the board. And he doesn't usually do that. That's the one thing that Gabriel, when Gabriel is, he's with me on the heat, like he's done mistakes that he usually don't do it. So he was just sitting there like thinking he has priority, and I'm like looking one more time, and I'm like, oh my God.
But you fully knew you had priority.
I knew it. Otherwise, I wouldn't pat on that wave. Like that wave could have a section to do an error or something. But honestly, like the guy was winning with 9, or I don't even know the scores. It was just almost not doable for me at that point. The waves are 2 feet, and I needed 9 point something, and it was hard. So I looked at once, looked twice, and I'm like, hey, look, he hasn't looked a single time. And I'm like, just quiet. And when the wave came, and I'm like, look, I'm going. And I look at him, and I'm like thinking that he's going to paddle, and look, the guy just went for it. And I'm like, holy shit, he's coming.
It was like Christmas morning for you.
It was a Christmas morning for me.
Like you knew.
It was part of a hell ride for a few days. It was just like the craziest thing. I mean, when I left the beach, I try to message like Gabriel's mom. I try to call her and tell her like, hey, sorry for what happened in the heat. Like I didn't do it on purpose. Like he just got in my wave. And I just want to say sorry because I knew that was a world title heat and like he could have win the world title there. And man, I felt horrible. Honestly, like I hate winning like that. And it was the shittiest feeling. Like I got in my hotel room and I was like, I would rather not win this heat and just get out of here like clean than just have all of what was happening to me. Like people were messaging, like I don't even know how many people messaged me like saying shit to me and my family. Like it was crazy.
But it didn't you have 10,000 messages in 2 hours or something?
Yeah, plus. Like I was getting out like my whole Instagram inbox was like getting full every like 5 seconds. It would be like full, all new messages and not a single one positive.
Except like for beach grits. Except for beach grits message.
Yeah, I mean, you guys probably know the feeling sometimes.
Because you had Gabriel's what 3 million followers and Neymar Jr's 130 million,
yeah,
followers. Yeah.
If 1% of that, maybe even less than 1%, 0.5% send me a message, imagine how with the number of that. So it's just crazy. You went crazy. But after a couple of days, Jetson posted something about it and it was the coolest thing. Like everything turned to positive and after that people start supporting me and want to see me win at the contest. So it was kind of like a good push, and I came back stronger after that. But for a couple of days, my friend was with me, and he's like, hey, man, look, honestly, don't even open your phone. Like, you don't really want to see it. Like, and I'm like,
That makes you want to open your phone.
It's like, oh, shit, what's going on? People are saying, like, oh, hope I don't see you on the streets in Brazil, whatever. And I'm like, oh, man.
Can you imagine being a thug in Brazil who killed another man because he had an interference with Gabriel Medina in Portugal? That'd be a weird thing to go to jail for, huh?
Oh man, like
yeah, but look at stinking. Didn't it happen in Argentina? Who was the or in Brazil, right? Or Colombia? Sorry, Pablo Escobar had the soccer players killed who screwed up. It happens in South America.
Yeah, I mean it sucks because all his followers, I feel like, has all kinds of followers. It's just not surfing. I don't think there's 8 million surfers like interested in seeing Medina. I mean, the guy is interesting, but it's just not like those people probably are not surfers. So they're just picking Medina's side. The funny story was maybe a day or two after what happened, like I went surfing like the other side of Peniche and like I see this little fisherman guy and I was surfing with the judges and they're like in the water and they came in at the same time. So had this fisherman with like a bunch of little fish and squid. And I'm like, hey man, look, what kind of technique you use with that pole? He had a pole and I like, I don't know. So I asked him, what kind of technique is that? Like, I want to learn. Maybe I can do it at home, something like that. And he's like, where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from Brazil. He's like, Medina got robbed. I'm like, the judges start losing it. I'm like, holy shit. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, he got robbed. Pretty funny. The guy, hey, honestly, the guy was like 70 plus. Like 70 plus at least. And he knew what happened. So that was funny.
I liked when you were describing how you texted Gabrielle's mum after the heat because I thought you were going to ask her out. I thought, fuck, that is badass. Yeah. I just beat your son. Now I'm going to fucking take you out. Go cry in the shower, Gabrielle.
Yeah.
Cheers. Yeah. Mama's coming home with me.
Well, the pressure that I had, I'm like, oh, man, maybe the judge is going to change the result. So I kind of lived with that fear for a couple of days until I had the jersey on for the next heat.
Do you think that – Do you think that the WSL was trying to work out a way to reverse the decision? Because you were very theatrical when you were gesticulating on the actual ride.
Well, I was just like going back and forth with the footage, and like the thing that didn't help was right after in the post show they've done it something that looked like perfect towards Gabriel's claim, you know. Like I remember, I think Rosie and Strider just explained, like, yeah, but look, Gabriel actually reached the outside first, and Kyle just reached out after, and he still got the priority. So they kind of said stuff that they're not supposed to, or they're not going with the right footage for those things that they were saying. So at one point, I'm like, oh man, I think I don't know. I'm saying Portugal, but I'm going on the next flight home. So I was kind of scared, but I was pretty solid with what I lived and for what I've seen at that time. So I'm like, I'll just stand for it.
Did you have that kind of sinking feeling that you got kind of screwed on the wild card and now you're going to get fucked on this as well?
No. I feel like that feeling kind of died already on, like at the beginning of the year after Margaret's. I was kind of like, look, I'm back. I was treating myself as one of the guys again. I'm like, look, I'm back. I'm part of this. Like, this is where I belong and this is what I'm doing. So I at that point, I was just trying to fight for surviving. I'm like, I don't want to get out of the tour. Like, the tour is where I make my money from, and this is what I love to do. I love to surf, and I enjoy being on tour and surfing those waves. So I was just stoked to on Gabriel's screwed up, but he helped me out. Maybe the world title wasn't that heat that he lost, but he helped me out, so I owe him a barbecue.
and then 2 months later, you find yourself a pipeline.
Ooh wee!
in a heat with Gabriel again. What happened there?
Charlie, it wasn't Gabriel.
Even before the heat, did you think, okay, this is going to be something?
Yeah. Oh, of course. I was pretty psyched. Like, honestly, it's good for me. Like, I've learned how to love heats with Gabriel. I know something going to go wrong. I know something going to happen. And this is good to me. And this is good to, like, all my family. Everybody knows, like, you're going to be a good heat. It could be something strategy or going to be surfing, but something going to happen. So I don't look for it because that guy is really hard to win. So I don't look for hits with him, but when I have him, I like it.
So describe your strategy before that heat. Was there a little bit of locker room play?
I was warming up on the pathway for the compass. He picked up his jersey and he was just running, and he almost like went hit his back on my arms, I think. Walking down to the heat, and I'm like, look, that was kind of aggressive. I kind of hated that feeling, but he was gone so quick that I couldn't react that quick. So I'm like, right on. So he started warming me up on the beach and like just doing his thing, and he's like preparing himself like to paddle out, and I see him like almost ready to run to the water. So I started running right in front of him. We jump in the water right in front of him, just trying to see if I can play with him a little bit. But yeah, if I did what he done to me in that heat, I would probably made the heat. So I would block him on his four, so he wouldn't get the four, and I would get the last wave, and I could have made the heat of the two. So if I use his technique, I would have made it. But that was kind of lame.
Did you hear Charlie yelling, burn him, burn him?
Yeah. And for a second I saw his face and I'm like, he looked like he was embarrassed. Just saying like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. 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 Looked like he was embarrassed. I'm like, dude, I get it. What is he saying? Like, I don't understand. Why burn him when I have the priority? Like, it didn't really make sense. At that time, I wasn't really like, this just doesn't add up. I didn't realize I didn't have enough points for him to lose if he gets the interference. And Kelly was in a heat as well. I think he had a heat with staff at that time. He's like, go under his jersey, like get under his skin. Like, you know, I know you can do it. And I'm like, right on, like, don't worry, I will do it. But
he's a shit stirrer, isn't he?
Yeah. He loves it.
Shit stirrer, it's amazing.
And it's just like Charlie was yelling, and I couldn't really understand what was the point. And after he's done it, I pedal back on, and I'm like, dude, what the fuck was that? And he's like, oh man, I'm so sorry. It's just like, oh, I had to do it. I'm sorry. And I'm like at that time, I was just over, like, I that was kind of lame, and I understand he had to do it. Honestly, if I knew I could do it to win a world title or to keep the dream alive, like, I would have done as well. Like, I totally understand the reason she's done it, and he had to do that and make the heat, and that's the point. Like, there's people that does everything to win, and he's one of them, and I don't blame.
There was rules or a sub rule getting blown up again. It's Gabriel's followers just on you. there's a sub rule about sportsmanship, right? Where they like, and it was obviously we've talked about the WSL and how they make rules depending on the personality via Kelly, via John, and now via this. But it seemed to me a very clear breach of sportsmanship. At the time, I mean, when I was writing about it, I didn't see how you could see it any other way. Yes, maybe he was in the right here and here, but in terms of sportsmanship, burning somebody is the least sportsmanlike thing you can do in surfing. And so I was still frustrated by or disbelieving of their final argument on that one. That is not sportsmanship. They were talking about heat sportsmanship, but come fucking on. This is surfing. Like, we're burning somebody. There's only one rule. Don't burn. I mean, in the non-competition, in the lineup. And that's it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty lame. I mean, like, people start sending me a bunch of, like, screenshots from the rule book. Like, go there. You're going to go. It was just a gray zone on the rule book that it wasn't really clear for any action. They're like, oh, maybe we can give him a fine or whatever. And, like, at that point, I'm like, look, I made a few heats at this event. I'm like, I qualified myself for next year. The last thing I want is trouble right now with, like, the whole team that lived in Portugal. So I was just out of it. I'm like, look, it's all good. Like, I'm back next year for the whole thing again. And we deal with that later.
And then dun, dun,
dun. When did you realize when Gabriel jumps in on you, did you just go, he's fucking had a brain snap? Because the commentators didn't get it straight away. And I remember when he dropped in looking at the scores going, fuck, he can win this with one wave. How long before did you just think he'd had a brain snap, or did you know what was happening?
Yeah, well, his stepfather was like yelling, burn him. But I think they talked about it. They had to plan that for a long time. They had to plan it because I never thought about that situation. Like, you know, burn somebody, even like, I don't know. He had to be very smart about it, but I don't know. It's lame.
It was so sinister and so clever, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I got out of the water kind of like shocked, like what happened? And for him, honestly, like being there at that time, for him, I think was the most negative thing that he could have done to win. Like, people, like, I feel at that point, the beach was packed to see Gabriel win. And at that point, everybody was kind of like, he's kind of lame. Now everybody's like, went to Italo's fans, you know? Like, at that point, right after, like, the beach commentator was like, hey, who's here to see Gabriel? And people just, whoo! And who's here to see Italo? Wow! The whole beach reality. So at that point, kind of, I felt that happening. Like, I saw people kind of like, hey, man, look, that guy's kind of lame. But, yeah, it was kind of negative for him, I feel. And I don't think he would have done it again for how negative it was. I mean, if he had to win the heat, he would have done it. But it was – I think he saw with his own eyes that was kind of lame.
How good is Italo?
Man.
He's a man who just wins it purely on heart, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's just so entertaining to have him on Instagram. He's the only guy in the world that the coronavirus didn't affect his prediction at all. It's like new clips every single day. And there's no point for him to save, like, errors. Like, he doesn't need to save errors. It's crazy. He does it every single day. And there's always a new one coming out, and it's insane.
When were you first aware of Italo coming up? I mean, were you aware of him early on? Or,
oh, yeah.
So you thought this guy is something else?
Well, to be completely honest to you, like, so he was a little kid from up north in Brazil, and I was with Oakley already, like, a few years, and we had one of the amateur contests in his, like, around his town. And I don't know if you guys know Pinga, that was his manager, and my manager, Adriano, managed for a long time. So Pinga was the Oakley team manager at that time. And he went on that trip with us to pick up another little kid from that town. So the kid already kind of knew that Pinga was in town to pick him up and this and that. So a bunch of little pro surfers came to help the kid out and pick the waves for the kid and kind of does all this pushing thing for Pinga to take him to Oakley. But ended up that Italo was surfing on the side and Italo was ripping and nobody was, like, helping Italo or whatever. So Pinga was like, man, look at this little kid. Like, everybody think he's going to be something, but who going to be the one going to be that little kid? And he spoke to Italo's parents, like, right on the beach on that day. And they were like, hey, man, look, we're going to sponsor him and this and that. So he already took him under his wing. And right after, the next day, we've done a little surf trip around the town and start surfing with him. He was really good and snappy and quick, but he didn't have the carves and he didn't really know how to, like, get better at that time. So honestly, Italo got better. If you see clips from Italo's first and second year on tour, like, he finished 17, I don't know, first and second year or whatever. Like, he wasn't surfing the way he surfs today. He definitely had the moment of excitement, but it wasn't nearly like the way he surfs today. Today, he's the man to beat. And I feel like there's nobody that loves surfing more than him. He just stays in the water all day and he does crazy stuff and he does it for love. He loves to do it. And it's crazy. I feel that's the difference of Italo and everybody else. I feel like Italo's doing for definitely Italo loves the attention, the ego or whatever. So that feeds him. But he loves to do it because he loves to do it. So it's sick just to watch.
It sort of parallels with John, huh? I mean, two guys who just love surfing for surfing's sake and not winning for winning's sake.
Yes.
And John wins it his way and Italo wins it his way.
Yes. But, yeah, I feel like John, he loves surfing no matter what and he would do it no matter what. But Italo loves surfing, but he would love to win the title to be the guy, you know? It's the opposite of people, but they all have the same thing in common, that is the love for surfing on their own way. And I feel those two guys would keep surfing no matter if they were professional or not. So that's the soul behind the body.
Did you love that opening gambit at the in the final at Pipe and Italo got Gabriel and got that sick backdoor trick?
That was the sickest final. Honestly, like, that was insane. Like, how good is it for us? I feel that's why WSL is just going crazy about it. They wanna make that happen every single event, have the first and second on the rankings in the final. But it's insane. Like, that was so entertaining, and I just wouldn't imagine the feeling maybe Italo, because he was second, he had nothing to lose. So he wanted more than Gabriel. But I couldn't imagine the feeling of Gabriel, like, kind of like, oh, man, this guy's coming hot. And, yeah, my legs are just shaking at that point because it was just crazy. Crazy to imagine, like, that feeling of, like, oh, shit, this is the guy that's coming hot. He's in second place. Like, he wants my trophy. So it's kind of crazy. Yeah, it was insane to watch.
And who are you supporting in the final?
Well, I think I was packing my bags. I was packing my bags. I was done with the season, out of Hawaii. Too much happened in 2019, so I was ready to get out of there. I was just like, I saw the results in the heat review after, but I didn't watch live. But I thought Italo would be the first time for him to win, and I think it was a great opportunity for him. Gabriel's just like, he won already twice. He would probably win five more times or more. So maybe Italo have a shot and make the dream happen.
If it all happens again, I mean, if the professional surfing is ever a thing ever again, do you got a title in you?
Well, honestly, like, after this coronavirus time, I feel like I'm in the best shape of my life, and I feel like I'm improving my surfing every time I surf. And I honestly, like, it's so hard. Like, who am I to say, like, yes, I got a world title on me? But I will definitely, like, now with the new format that they want to do, with the five guys going to a different place and surfing.
Are you into that?
Well, honestly, like, for my personally, me, for Kyle, like, if I ever get to that point that I got myself into top five and I'm on the last day of competition, it's giant, it's barreling, and it's going off, or maybe it's Bell's Beach big, maybe I have a chance. Maybe I'm on the day that nobody can stop me and win a world title right there. Like, no matter what I've done the whole year, I got myself into top five, and then I won everybody and I won the title. I think that would help me win a world title.
How did you, real quick, going all the way back to the start, you as a city kid, how are you so unafraid of, like, big, heavy conditions?
I feel like in the young age, so I went to my first Hawaiian season when I was 12. Oakley took me there for the first time. And, man, honestly, like, we didn't have a choice surfing anywhere else other than off the wall back to our pipeline. Like, Pinga would take us to the beach and he would put a cereal bar and a box of water. And it could be like 1 foot, it could be 10 foot. And they're like, he's like, hey, man, look, we're not going to surf anywhere else other than this. So you pick the time you want to get in, you want to go out, and just don't get in until it's like sunset time. So I just learned how to surf big waves, kind of like I was forced a little bit at first. When I was really young, and as soon as I came back to Brazil, after I surfed off the wall, like 6 foot, that is freaking scary. Like, everything else seemed soft. And I was just like, oh, man, I kind of like big boards. So I started riding bigger boards. And I just, my surfing kind of got shaped into that, like, riding bigger boards and going out of where people, that's where it goes back to people, like, saying, like, oh, no, it's too big. People, like, it's not good. Like, I would like to go out because people said it's like you can't make it out. So it was kind of like, if people said don't go there, like, I would go there. And I just like to challenge myself in that point that people are scared or people are afraid of going. And I just like that feeling of going, like, Chopu, like, I never been there in my whole life. Like, I went there last year and I got the first swell over 6 foot. I've been there like 3 years, for the last 3 years, but last year was the very first time that I seen big waves in Chopu. And when I got there and I saw everybody, all the competitors with giant eyes in the channel, I got that feeling on me again, like, holy shit, everybody's scared. Like, this is my time. Have I done it before? No, I have never done it. I don't know where I'm going. I know that it's going to be scary, but I know if I make it, like, you're going to be sick.
How does it feel paddling into your first proper Chopu wave? Like you're looking down, staring at dry reef.
Before you actually look, like I was free surfing with all the local guys, and man, the very first day that I surfed big Chopu, like I would see those guys paddling in the wave, and like they wouldn't paddle like that. They would be paddling like this, and I'm like, man, this guy literally gonna die. Like there's no chance in the world he's gonna make that drop. Anywhere else in the world, like people don't make the drop. And the guy would come out and I'm like, oh shit, I'm gonna have to get myself on that spot and see what it looks like. It was so scary, and it's just I love that feeling of almost dying surviving. So I tried once a little in the channel and I made it, and then I went a little deeper, and like soon enough I was taking under the peak and trying to do it. The city boy done it, so I can do
it. What's the technique for taking off right on the spot on an 8-foot wave at Chopu?
Well, the technique is surviving. Like you paddle strongest as you can, have thickest board, you can knife under the lip, and it's just you gotta have the confidence, like because the wave is already kinda eating you in the back. It's ready to take you down. So if you don't believe you can do it, like you won't be able to do it. It's all in your head. But the wave, if you know you can do it, you're gonna tuck right in. You gotta just put your weight forward, honestly. Like I don't know how to explain, but Chopu, if you put your weight forward, the board not gonna create any air under the board, and you're gonna be able to make it. It's just scary when you're there and you're under that situation. You're like, if I fall, I'm gonna die. There's no other way. That's the feeling you have every time.
And when you see that fear in other guys' eyes, does that give you a strength?
Yes.
Does it make you? I'm the alpha male here. Oh, yeah. Rich motherfuckers. Yeah.
You pussy. Yeah. Even then.
Ooh, look at me! I'm getting a 10-foot tube, Philippe. Look at me. Ooh.
Yeah, it's insane. I love it. I mean, it's probably scarier for me when I go out of the locals and they're looking at me like that. And I'm like, fuck, I don't have any weak guy to feed myself up. But when the guys are scared, it's kind of cool. Like we're on the same page, but I look like I'm not, but I am.
Have you ever had any sort of moments when, you know, fear becomes too overwhelming for you? Or was that only when you were young?
No, yeah. No, I don't get overwhelmed. No, I don't think so. Yeah, when I fear, that's where I get more focused and where I kind of like realize what I got to do. If I don't fear, I kind of take everything for granted and things goes right in front of my eyes and I don't see it. That's what happens.
So does anything scare you?
Well, what scares me is like maybe like one of those waves or one of those things that I put myself into it kills me and I'm not able to tell the story. That's what scares me. So because I love being an edge and kind of like taking myself out of my like out of the comfort zone. And I feel like sometimes the comfort zone, it's necessary, and you gotta know when you're gonna put yourself in those situations. And I feel like if I lived in Tahiti or Hawaii, I would probably be living on a very thin edge, and that's scary. Scares me. So Brazil is safe enough.
Have you ever pushed it too far?
What is that?
Have you ever felt like you've pushed it too? Had a moment where you go, "Oh fuck, I pushed it too far on this one."
No. I calculate a lot. Like I'm very like, I know my limits, and I try to go through the edge of the limit, but I don't go over. Like soon as I'm done with it, I'm like, okay, I'm good. If I've done it, I surf enough time. Like I don't need to go surf again and give a chance of something wrong happening. So I know my limits.
Hey, it's getting late in Brazil. Are you a party boy? Are you gonna go out and chase bitches?
Coronavirus time, like that. Well, no. Yeah, I'm not a party boy, but definitely after I got single, like I'm kind of enjoying life a little bit.
Because you're engaged, right?
I was married for a year and a half, almost 2 years.
You got married?
Yeah, we're married. We're planning the wedding, and maybe that's where everything went wrong.
Oh man, planning a wedding is awful.
Hey, planning a wedding with the guy that you freaking lost the sponsor off tour. Like, look, just ditch that motherfucker.
Just burgers. We're gonna serve burgers at our wedding. Yeah.
That's is that what broke your relationship up? You said, hey, let's do something really simple.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know what happened. It just happened. We met really young. We're like 17 when we first met, and we married, and we thought that's what we wanted. And I don't know. Life is just crazy when you get.
So how long we got together for, you and Alyssa?
We were together for 8 years.
Holy fuck!
Yeah, long time, and then we got married, and yeah. Things just didn't work. We had to move on. She's from Hawaii. I'm from Brazil. Luckily, like the dollar hit five for $1 after. So I was back in Brazil, not paying rent in California. Like, yeah.
Were you planning on living in Hawaii? Was that going to be the plan?
Yeah, we're moving to Hawaii at some point, and we're kind of getting ready to move, and it's just. One day we're just like, look, is that really what we wanted? And we're just in different times in our lives that is just we gotta look for what we really want, and like right now there's no time to bullshit. So we're just better off like separate. And we decided that together, and she was cool with it. She was gonna live in Hawaii, and I'm like, hey, look, I'm gonna live in Brazil. And it was perfect. Like, she's a good girl. She's nice, and she deserves the best. And I'm happy being single in Brazil for now. And I've learned a lot, and I've learned how to date a Brazilian chick. Every man in the world deserves a Brazilian chick.
Derek, what do they do? What makes them so wonderful?
Well, they're just loving, man. They want to just take care of the man. And I feel like in the US, you got to just take the trash and carry the groceries upstairs, and you got to just clean the yard. It's just you and pay the bills.
and every day they say, no, you don't.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. You sexist. And then.
You sexist. You racist. Yeah. You homophobic.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
So I'm like, I got back to Brazil. Life is beautiful. Women here want to take care and make breakfast in bed for you, impress you, and do all kinds of stuff. So I'm good with that. I started dating her when I was 17, and it was just a long, long time without being in business. So it's good. It's good to breathe a little bit before I find out.
How did you survive the initial heartbreak? Because I always find that's the toughest bit. Those first few months, you know, when your chick starts dating someone else, and
yeah,
you got movie reel in your head.
I mean, it's just like somebody gonna move quicker than others, you know, and she just jumped into another relationship, which was probably great for her. And I was kind of suffocated at that time. I'm like, dude, let me breathe. Like, let me get out of here. At the same time, you don't want, you know, like you're dating someone and you have that respect for so long. That like I kind of wanted to do my thing off the chart. I didn't want her to know who I was going out with, or wanted her to see. So I was just kind of like, I want to get out of Hawaii and I want to just fly away a little bit. So it was good. It's the heartbreak. Like it definitely happens. Like the first few weeks, like you're just broken to shit. And I was competing at that time. Like I had a contest in France, and was pretty hard to take, but it's like after a couple of weeks, I mean, it doesn't even need a week. Like we broke up in October. It was in France during the Quick Pro. Man, I had a hell of a time in Europe. Like that was the greatest Europe lag that I ever had. I never had that much fun in my life. Like now. And I'm like, this is actually a good life. That's why I kind of we kind of got over it, and I'm like, look, life is great. Like, why you gotta have one if you can just have as much as you can or as much as you can take?
That's the fucking spirit, eh? Yeah.
maybe the chicks that I've been going out, maybe the one chick I've been going out, or maybe a couple of them, they're gonna see this interview and they're gonna be, you motherfucker. Nah.
He bad. No, you don't.
I'm pretty quiet. Like, I don't do this kind of stuff. I'm a good guy.
Is the hardest thing about the breakup, apart from the heartbreak, the fact that you have to go through Instagram and delete all the little photos of you guys together?
Yeah. It's, for me, like, deleting is not even like deleting because we're together is easy, but I feel like it's hard when she was in the picture and like we had a memory there, you know, like something great happened on that day, or it was the sickest day and it just happened for us to have a photo together. Like, it's memories. When you break up somebody, it's just like somebody died to you. And for me, it was just like, it's the hard feeling to understand, like, somebody dying in your life, you know, you're not going to ever talk to that person again and you're never going to see that person again. And I'll probably have to see her like competing everywhere, you know, but no hard feelings. Like, just nothing was convenient on that time. Deleting pictures, like, seeing her with another guy, and it just happens. Everybody go through it. But
did you Google his, because she's with a UFC fighter now, did you Google his fights and see if he could handle himself?
No, I didn't. No, I don't know. Honestly, like, I don't, man.
Because you know a bit of BJJ, eh?
No, I don't know much. I started doing it a few months ago. I'm new to it.
So you need to practice before you take on the UFC.
Every single Brazilian has to do it, though. I've never met one Brazilian who doesn't do BJJ.
Well, it's BJJ, a street fight, you know? Like, Brazilians are good at picking up, like, piece of wood and just, like, cracking the wood in the head. So it's like, if you don't know one, you got to know another one. Kind of, yeah. But, yeah, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover. I like to surf. Everybody has what they deserve. So I want to find a little cute little chick. Maybe not a surfer, so I don't need to share waves anymore. I learned that.
Yeah, fuck that. No escape, isn't it? You go for a surf and your chick goes, I'm coming too. Surf, yeah.
And she's having a shitty time and she look at you like, come on, can I have that one? I'm like, fuck. No sharing waves no more. Maybe find out for the films.
Hey, Kai, thank you so much for your time, mate. You've been amazing. Yeah. As we knew you would.
Thank you.
The underdog.
Hey, when you guys edit this thing, like, edit nice so I don't lose my sponsor, The Leftover.
There's no editing. It's just raw.
Get your new sponsors. Don't you worry.
Yeah, get me sponsors.
Do you want to give your sponsors a little shout out?
Yes. I would like to thank Ride and DHD and Oakley for all those years and supporting me. A hard time. This pandemic is a hard time for everybody, and I'm glad to have them stuck with me through this hard time.
And I guess DHD, there's a few Kaya belly boards that unwax that you can probably sell.
Yeah, probably like in California, you can find one of my boards. Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much, Kaya. You've been great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Such a pleasure.
Thank you, bro.
And if you guys need anything else, I'll be here. Mama worked.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.